This is an ABC podcast.
Hey, we're here. The end of another week. It couldn't come soon enough. I know you feel the same. This is The Shake Up. I'm Dave Marchese, and I'm coming to you from one of the greatest cities in the world. I'm going to call it Newcastle. We're on beautiful Awabakal land, and we've officially wrapped up Hack Selection Road Trip after a month of travelling across the country. We hit up the Upper Hunter region yesterday. Now we're in, I guess you could call it, the Hunter's capital city. And hey, we've got a lot of ground to cover from this week.
Hack's election road trip.
There's going to be jobs that go from rural communities to this transition, and there's nothing we can do about that.
These are people who are earning $20.33 an hour.
If I'm trying to get my hair done, honestly, I use that time to also get work done.
With Dave Marchese.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot I want to dive into with this shake-up today. And because we're in Newey, I've got some A-plus locals to break down the big issues. People from Newcastle, if you don't know, they're called Novocastrians. And I've got a couple for you. First, Sage Swinton, journalist at the Newcastle Herald. Welcome to Hack.
Thanks for having me.
How are you feeling?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah? Ready for your first shake-up?
Yeah, definitely.
It's always a really interesting experience, especially when I'm like furiously pressing buttons on the other side of the panel here. You know, the Newcastle studio is a bit different. And look, we've got another Novocastrian, law student, proud Novocastrian, Angus Neal. How are you doing?
What's going on? I'm doing pretty well. Excited to be here.
Yeah? How's the weekend shaping up? Are we looking good?
Yeah, man. I'm just glad to be here in lovely Newcastle. I'd like to correct what you said earlier. Not one of the greatest cities. The greatest.
You reckon, if you dispute that, please call in 1300 055 536 or text in 0439 757 555. A lot of people claiming they're the greatest city in the country. Hey, we've got so much to cover. Let's get into it.
Hitting the road for the election.
But our focus is actually providing opportunities for mob to be able to come out and get employment and find that longevity.
With Dave Marchese on Hack.
Yeah, we've been on the ground in the Hunter Valley in New South Wales this week, and even if you've never been here, you probably know a lot about it. It's wine, it's racehorses, it's power plants, it's coal mining. The Hunter's also at the centre of a national debate about our future.
The election road trip.
We've been here growing grapes for almost 200 years. It's existed here alongside over its lifetime.
I think the big thing is everyone thinks the mines are going to shut up tomorrow and finish up and leave. That's not going to be the case.
Being on the doorstep of such a big industry, we know what it means to the local community in terms of jobs. And then we also have to deal with the other side of the coin, where we're dealing really firsthand with the most severe consequences of climate change.
So I guess the risk really for the Hunter is that we don't take advantage of the opportunities that are in front of us. So we've got a lot of things going for us in terms of being able to house a lot of new industries around renewables.
There's going to be jobs that go from rural communities through this transition, and there's nothing we can do about that. What we need to do is to make sure that these rural communities are going to also profit from the work that they're doing to help the economy to be net zero.
There's, you know, a lot of community sentiment that's sort of starting to see that things are shifting, and recognition that rather than have all of our eggs in that basket, that we need to start diversifying the economy a bit more.
And I think the problem is at the moment there's a war on energy, but they're trying to use the Hunter Valley as going, well, why don't we turn it into a renewables hub? But I don't know why we have to replace an industry with an industry. We're open to the transition of renewables into the environment, but it's going to have to happen naturally.
On Hack.
Yeah, we heard a lot of perspectives yesterday. We heard from young people in the Hunter's mining industry, in farming, other locals too. Now I want to hear from you. What's the future of places like the Hunter that rely a lot on coal mining? Should it continue after Australia transitions to renewable energy? The mining industry, I mean. What do you think of the political debate over this? Send us your thoughts, 0439 757 555. You can call in as well, 1300 055 536. Let's get into it. With me to discuss, Newcastle Herald journalist Sage Swinton and Novocastrian and law student Angus Neal. Angus, we've already got Amanda on the text line saying Newcastle is the best place in the world.
Thank you very
much. Not just the best city, the best place. So you got some backup. Let me know if you dispute it. Sage, I want to dive into this topic we've been talking about over the last couple of days, right? So the Hunter's got this long history of coal mining. And even though it's a huge employer, there are a lot of different opinions around about when it should be phased out, right? Is that what you hear all the time covering this patch?
Yeah, definitely. We're hearing from some people that there's still a really strong demand for coal, especially overseas. But we're also hearing that people really want answers about what is going to happen next and how it's going to happen.
Yeah, it seems that, you know, that like people want to have a plan for the future, right? And that's one of the big criticisms that we're hearing from locals. Angus, you grew up in Newcastle. It's obviously not in the coal fields, but coal is still really prominent in Newcastle. Like, this is the biggest coal port in the world. Do you have any particular feelings on coal? Like, growing up, was it a big part of your life, your identity here as a Novocastrian?
I feel like it is obviously a big part of the identity as a Novocastrian. The industry is massive and pervasive. Like, I've got a lot of friends with family and stuff working in the industry. But I think, you know, it's becoming kind of inevitable that that phase out is happening. And having so many friends and family members involved in that industry, you know, you do worry about who's getting left in the lurch, but I think it's those people we need to be focusing on supporting rather than just phasing it out and leaving them in the lurch.
What do you see, Sage, in the years ahead for the Hunter, right? Because I guess that's what a lot of people are asking, a lot of locals. Do you think that there are going to be these dramatic changes in the next decade, or as some in the mining industry that we spoke with, you know, yesterday said, oh, no, we'll still be relying a lot on coal and it'll still be a major industry here?
Yeah, from what we're hearing, that is what people are saying, that, you know, coal's not going to go away in the near future. But the Hunter is a pretty diverse place. As you mentioned, you know, there's wineries, there's other industries that make up the region and the way that it operates. But there's really got to be a plan, I guess, as to what's going to happen moving forward, where the jobs are going to be, where the industry is going to be, and what's going to happen to the mines themselves. How are they going to be remediated?
Well, it's not just the Hunter, right? Like, there are other mining communities across Australia that are going through this. I'm going to try and go to someone who's called in. Monique, are you there? You're calling from Gladstone.
Hey, yeah, I'm here.
And what's your opinion on what's going on? Like, it's probably a very similar situation in Gladstone, I would imagine.
Absolutely. So coal mining is one of the main exports of the Gladstone community, as well as alumina. And having big industries in Gladstone like Santos and Rio Tinto are very important to the community. They give a lot of funds back to the community. A lot of our schools and local sporting things are funded by these large industries, and they are our main employers. Obviously, it's a double-sided coin. We've got the climate crisis happening and how important that is, but also how important these big businesses are to keep people employed and to keep our economy moving, especially in a town like Gladstone. Without big business, inflation rises. Everything is really different. It's all tied to that big business. So it is really interesting to have the two sides of the coin there, because
yeah,
it's really important to look after the climate, but also to keep those communities afloat and have people and have those access to like facilities like, you know, sporting communities and things like that as well, to keep that community environment going.
It's so true, Monique. And that was definitely what we were hearing from locals on the ground in the Upper Hunter yesterday. They were saying it's this weird conflict that we're faced with, because obviously, you know, a lot of us want the best for the environment and we want to be pursuing renewable energy or the rest of it. But at the same time, you know, there's no big plan for our communities and no one wants to see their communities really suffer. Monique, thanks so much for calling in. We've got some messages coming through. Chris from Maitland says, if Australia closes down its coal exports, other countries will fill the void with less clean and less regulated production. The demand is so big right now with countries looking to develop. That's one of the things that we heard a lot as well. And we heard that from the former member for Hunter, Joel Fitzgibbon, was saying, look, you know, we might phase out coal use in the years ahead, but there are other countries, developing countries, that needs this coal and ours is the cleanest. That's the line that comes out. And so we should be providing this. What do you think of that argument, Angus?
Yeah, look, I mean, it feels a little bit reductive. I think absolutely we want to be making sure that we're supporting these other nations in their energy resources. But I think there are better ways for us to be doing that. I think Australia is a huge player internationally, and we should be getting ahead of the game in terms of renewable energies. And that's something that we can absolutely be helping other nations to do as well. Obviously, with this election coming up, it does seem to feel very Australia-centric. And it's important for us to, I suppose, or for the leaders to be considering, where our interests lie. But I think as global citizens, we have that obligation as well to be doing these things and making these advances, not only within Australia, but making sure that the impacts of those are felt internationally.
Sage, one of the things that we did hear from people in the mining industry was they don't think that they're portrayed fairly across the media, especially in national media, maybe not so much local media. Some think they come across as, the bad guys just because they're trying to defend their jobs. You cover a lot of local news here. Do you look at how the Hunter's written about in other publications, national media or the rest of it, and sometimes think, nah, that's not it. It's a bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, for sure. It is really complex is the issue. And like here in Newcastle, we had the mayor of Muswellbrook on the front page the other day saying to both Labor and Liberal, federally, as well as the state government, get off your ass and come down here.
Oh, whoa, strong words.
Yeah. They feel like they give so much, those communities give so much to our economy and get little in return. And there's conversations that are going on about how to transition and climate change and moving away from coal, but they're not happening in the areas that are going to be most affected.
Someone on the text line says, this isn't the first time that an industry's been phased out as technology advances. It's those who are innovative that survive. There's so much there. Somebody else says, can we please acknowledge the huge subsidies the coal industry takes? That costs us as Australians. Angus, when we heard from Joel Fitzgibbon, former MP, he was defending the coal industry a lot, and people were writing in saying, oh, this view is so old-fashioned, that's not how a lot of young people are thinking. What do you think? Like, does it annoy you when a lot of the people you hear making decisions about the future, obviously MPs, there's not very many young people in Parliament. Like, when I was speaking to one MP the other day, she was like, I'm super young, like, I'm 40. And, like, that was, like, a revelation that there was a 40-year-old in Parliament. Does it annoy you that older people are making these decisions when younger people, it's like our generations that's going to be putting in the hard yards in the future?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, I've been involved and a lot of friends have been involved in going along to, like, these climate strikes and stuff, and you hear a lot of loud young voices, but you wonder if these loud voices are ever being, taken into account at this executive level. And it is quite frustrating to hear, these older people who aren't going to have to see the consequences of these policies defending them. I think it's really important, as was on the text line before, I think it's really, really relevant that we are innovative. It is a huge opportunity for Australia to not only, make this switch in an environmental sense, but to absolutely prioritise the fact that we can be world leaders in this industry. We can be making these innovations, and this is an opportunity for us rather than a threat.
Do you think, Sage, that there's a country-city divide here as well? Like, we hear politicians saying one thing to people in the bush, another thing to people in the cities. Like, we're just talking like a generational divide maybe, but is there still that country-city thing happening?
Yeah, I think so. And even within the young person, old person perspective, I think that young people in the Hunter and probably other mining communities as well see it differently to young people in other areas, particularly in the cities. As all of us, a lot of people in Newcastle have connections to people who work or have worked in the coal mining industry, myself included. My dad's worked in the coal mining industry for 40 years. So we understand the need for change, but there is a different nuance to the connection that we have with coal mining here, and it affects us more.
Interesting point. Someone's written in, another local. He says, I'm a 29-year-old engineer working in the Hunter Valley coalfields. The writing's on the wall regarding the future of coal. I find the most frustrating aspect of the conversation is the lack of federal and state government planning to transition this industry. I'm confident I can find another job, but many other people in the industry have very specific experience and will struggle to swap. That is a big thing, right? That a lot of the people who've got these mines in the jobs, well, not all of them, but like some of them have come out of high school and landed these really good jobs. And that's a great thing that people don't have to go to university and study for years to have high paying jobs that there are other avenues in. But it's also going to cause a bit of a problem with this transition potentially, Angus.
Yeah. I mean, I've met friends now who have grown up with me, and they're quite opinionated on these issues as well, and they're, you know, some of them are even have been activists and have gone to protests, and then they get offered that mining company job and they're like, oh look, it's kind of too tough to turn down.
Really?
Yeah.
And I guess in the Hunter you see that, right? Like, you see your friends like maybe move into the industry and you wouldn't have expected it, but it happens. Like it's very dominant.
Yeah, no, it's huge, and it's really, as it has been obviously great for local industry. But I think, as we were saying before, it's really important that at a federal level we do have a pathway out of it, because the writing is on the wall. Regardless of, you know, who ends up in government, this is all getting phased out. And if we have a government in who is going to ignore that fact, the people who are in these industries are going to get left behind.
Some more messages coming through. James from Geelong Country says, unfortunately, climate change concerns are being expressed to those operating with a financial interest. Another person says government should be thinking 10 to 20 years into the future. Holding on to coal while every nation moves to renewables means we'll be left behind. All right, time to move on.
Hitting the road for the election with Dave Marchese.
Wage growth is dominating the campaign on Hack.
Yeah, just checking, does everyone reckon Friday afternoon's a good time to dive deep into the economy? Like, that's great, right? That's what you all want to hear.
Yeah, oh, I'm it's nice and chill. I like
Yeah, of course. Nah.
I have a wage growth and interest rates and whatnot.
It's so interesting, but seriously, you would have heard a lot about wages this week if you're following the election campaign. Anthony Albanese, he wants people getting more in their pay packets to match inflation, but Scott Morrison, he called him a loose unit. What's going on there?
The election road trip.
Real workers out there are doing it tough, and those people on the minimum wage, what they're making decisions on is whether they'll buy a steak or just have to stick to mincemeat.
If you have wages that rise at 5.1%, which is exactly what Mr. Albanese said yesterday, that means that can feed into inflation, which pushes up interest rates and pushes up the cost of living even more.
A $1 increase for those people who are on the absolute minimum wage, somehow the sky will fall in.
We can't have a situation where someone may get a wage rise, but then gets it all taken back in higher interest rates and higher costs of living.
The bigger risk is that a whole heap of people, i.e. the one in four workers that are on the minimum wage, their real wages go backwards, because that means they'll have less to spend in businesses because they depend on consumer spending.
On Hack.
Hey, it's something a lot of people want to talk about. We know cost of living is shaping up to be one of the biggest election issues. Are you on the minimum wage? Are you backing Scott Morrison? Are you backing Anthony Albanese on this issue? Or is it doing your head in, the whole thing? Are you like, what's going on? What's inflation? Let me know. 1300 055 536. You can message in as well. 0439 757 555. You are listening to The Shake Up, coming to you from beautiful Newcastle as we wrap up Hack's election road trip. Joined by a couple of loose units with me right now. They're the Prime Minister's words, they're not mine, guys. Newcastle Herald journo Sage Swinton and law student Newcastle local Angus Neal. Angus, any thoughts on Scott Morrison using the term loose unit to describe Anthony Albanese? What do you reckon of that one?
It kind of feels like Scott's handed Albo a big fat W with that one. Obviously, that wasn't his intention, but I feel like, you know, this is a get on the beers moment. I can already hear hear the remixes coming in.
It's going off on TikTok already.
Yeah.
They're coming out. They're coming out thick and fast. What do you reckon, Sage? Like, people being described as a loose unit might be seen as more of a good thing for a lot of young people.
Yeah, well, Albo's been a bit of a DJ in the past, hasn't he? And Scott described himself as a bulldozer today, so maybe he needs to be more of a loose unit.
Oh, maybe. We'll get onto those comments in a minute, but it was interesting to see the way that some people were reporting this. Like, the Macquarie Dictionary gave a definition to the Sydney Morning Herald. They were like, yeah, a loose unit, usually ascribed to someone who has eccentric and unconventional ways, as well as someone who enjoys going out on the town and getting plastered. Oh. So there we go. There's a full definition if you ever needed one.
We love it when the dictionary weighs in.
Hey, please, give us your definitions. Sage, maybe there's 2 million people on the minimum wage in Australia. That's what the experts think, approximately. Do you think this is going to be the deciding factor for a lot of them who are unsure how to vote? They'll see this, Anthony Albanese saying, hey, I want you to be paid more, and they'll go, yeah, actually, that's what I'll do.
Well, I think that people are really just looking at the impact that this the the cost of living is having on themselves. They're not sort of thinking about inflation or you know, 5.5% or 2% or those sort of figures. They're going to the grocery store and going, how much is my groceries costing? How much is petrol costing? A lot of people can't even afford their rent at the moment. The prices of rent are skyrocketing. So, yeah, I think that people are really taking these things into account when it comes to voting.
Angus, Scott Morrison saying Anthony Albanese's plan would lead to a chain reaction. He's saying higher interest rates, higher living costs. Do you think he has a point to be raising these issues?
Look, I think, you know, I'm no economist, but it seems to me like...
Aren't you? That's why we got you on.
Sorry, I must have put that on the resume accidentally. It seems to me as though, you know, if you have an economy structured on making sure that the, you know, the lowest paid people on the minimum wage are, you know, kept at a lower rate, you know, this is money that would go towards them being able to buy groceries, pay for their petrol, throw a couple bucks into their rent, or, you know, if it's even possible these days, into a mortgage. And if our economy is structured on that not being able to happen, and if it does, it will fall apart, it feels like something's wrong, right? And I feel like, I don't know, I would hope that we could be a bit more optimistic and that giving our most vulnerable people a couple extra bucks won't tear the place down.
Yeah. It's like a dollar, isn't it? A dollar extra an hour. It's
Yeah. That's right. A lot of people are texting in on this one. Somebody says, Scott Morrison can't have it both ways. On one hand, he says Albo can't affect a wage rise, but on the other hand, he's blaming Albo for inflation and interest rates. If interest rate rises, if wage rises happen. Another person says maybe he should work on local manufacturing so businesses can operate cheaper without cutting pay. I'm also interested in what Sage said before about Scott Morrison coming out today saying that he has this bulldozer leadership style. I don't know whether people saw this, and he says it's got to change. He said Australians expected this, like, really, you know, bulldozer style. I really find it funny, the bulldozer style from him during COVID. But, you know, as we go into the next period, on the other side of the election, I know there are things that are going to have to change. These are Scott Morrison's words. It kind of sounds like, and I've seen some media commentary on this, that he's distancing himself from himself. Do you think it was weird, Sage?
Yeah, I did think it was a bit weird. And I suppose that at this point in the election with a week to go, maybe he's sort of, there's been focus groups, he's sort of realised the way that he comes across. But it's a bit weird to be happening now when there's a week to go.
It is a bit of a weird one. What do you reckon? Do you have any thoughts on this, Angus?
Oh, I feel like Scott Morrison's character has been a huge issue for the Liberal Party. And I think a rebranding at this point, while, you know, probably kind of futile, is something that they want to try, because it's tough. It's tough, particularly even in the debates. You see Scott Morrison yelling a lot. He's quite aggressive, and I don't think that's resonating as much as the you know, the loose unit Albo seems to be. So yeah.
Do you reckon that we're going to see, like, because we're heading into the last week of the election, right? And I'm fascinated by this, because I'm wondering, do they save up all their best stuff for the last week, for the last few days, or their best insults or their best attacks? Or do you reckon Anthony Albanese, because he's ahead in all these polls, like, he's just going to try and hide out for a week and not do anything that might, you know, disturb the peace? What do you reckon, Sage? Any predictions?
Yeah, well, that's sort of been what people have been saying has been his strategy the whole time, is be this small target, let ScoMo go out and do what he does and just kind of cruise through Stephen Bradbury to the finish line.
Yeah, it could happen. What do you reckon, Angus?
Yeah, I think the best thing Albo could do is let Scott be his own worst enemy. And I think, you know, that's proved to be pretty effective thus far, and with some simple policy injected here and there, I think there's enough to get him over the line, I reckon.
Well, look, enough of these issues. It's time to talk about the really important stuff, if that's okay.
Hack's election road trip.
When you come to the hair shop and the barber shop, is where you go for the gossip.
With Dave Marchese.
Yeah, I know people are going to have strong opinions on this one. You're at the hairdresser or the barber. Maybe you're in a rideshare situation. Do you like to chat, or do you just want to sit in silence? Because apparently a lot more hairdressers are letting you choose. They're saying, fine, if you want to chill, you can have some quiet time, book it in. You can do it in Ubers. Are you a fan of this? Let me know, 0439757555. I'm keen to hear from our shake-up guests on this one. Sage Swinson from the Newcastle Herald, Nova Castrian student Angus Neal. Look, I don't think this is going to surprise anyone, but I actually don't mind a chat. So as soon as I sit down, I want to really unload. Hey, what's been happening in your week? And I expect the same. Angus, do you like having a chat while you're getting a chop or riding in a cab?
Yeah, look, I do. I do love a yarn. Actually, I was in an Uber on my way here and I was talking the Uber driver's ear off and he was loving it. And he was saying, you know, he was saying that he quite likes that people have an option because obviously sometimes it can be a bit awkward when they hop in and he's like, oh, you know, do you want to have a chat or not? And you know, one time he was saying that he had a rider who specified before the trip started, he was like, hey, you know, I like things quiet. So this Uber driver was preparing to have everything nice and silent. And as soon as the trip started, this rider hopped in and just started yarning his ear off. So, you know, I think it's great to have the option.
It's true. And like everyone should be able to choose for themselves. They don't all have to live the same way, right? Sage, does talking annoy you in these situations? Where do you sit?
I think I would like the option sometimes. Yeah. I feel like I get the most talkative Ubers when I'm like hungover, going to get my car the next day. I just don't want to talk to anyone. And then you've got the driver chewing your ear off. But then there's other times where there's no talking and I'm in the back going, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it.
Yeah.
How's your night been?
Oh, yeah, it always comes out. You're like, oh, here we go. Someone on text line says, I'm a barber and I'm all for this. I don't mind a chat, but if they just want to chill, it's fine by me. More time to focus on giving a sick haircut. Yeah, true. And I was going to ask, like, if you are a hairdresser or a barber, let me know because you're probably not wanting to chat. Like, you're probably thinking, hey, I've got to do this for good customer service. I don't know. Maybe that's the thing. You just want to get on with your job. And instead you're like, oh, small talk. How's your day going? How's your life been? I don't know. Or maybe it helps to time to pass quicker. I don't know. Let me know. Somebody else says, I've never taken an Uber and cut my own hair. Better just text Tom Avildsen. I don't know what that's about, that text. Should have probably read that one properly beforehand. Somebody else says, my dad's got a hearing aid, so he can't hear anyone anyway. So that's a pretty simple one. I guess they do this in libraries and stuff. Like, you know, libraries, you don't talk. It's just a rule, right? And everyone respects it. And, you know, train carriages, some of them now, they're quiet carriages. Do you reckon, Angus, people are just blowing up about this, think, you know, because they're saying, oh, we shouldn't be doing this, we shouldn't be prescribing this. We're already kind of doing it for other stuff.
I think it's, I mean, it's not real, is it? You just kind of, you opt in or you opt out. And I think it's always happened kind of colloquially. I think it's happened informally. Your hairdresser or your Uber driver is going to, you know, take a look at your mannerisms when you pop in and they're going to ascertain whether or not they should be talking to you. But I think, you know, for some of those more talkative Uber drivers or hairdressers, it's nice for some people who, you know, might experience a bit of social anxiety to just be able to stipulate, yo, is it cool if I just chill out?
Someone on the text line says silent services are becoming really popular for many neurodiverse people. Mm. Another person says need to read the room and feel the vibe of people. You know, that's really important. Exactly what Angus was saying just then. Do you reckon, Sage, COVID had something to do with it?
I think so.
We were locked up and now that we've come out, we're like, no, want to talk ever again. No, thank you.
Definitely. Yeah, I think even face-to-face contact, you know, you can't put yourself on mute in real life.
Exactly. It's a bit of an issue. And Angus, like, if you were in an Uber and it was not how you wanted it, you like a yarn, so maybe they're not chatting. Mm. Are you going to score down for that kind of activity?
No, I don't think so. Look, I think, you know, if I want a yarn and they're not chatting, I don't think I'm going to score down. If I am obviously not wanting a yarn and they are chatting, I feel like that's a different story. You know, I feel like you can score down in that circumstance, especially if you make it clear. But either way, like, I think, you know, it's kind of just social dynamic, social courtesy. Like, you know, if someone doesn't want a yarn, you're not gonna attack them with.
Hey, some people do. I've seen it. It happens sometimes. Somebody says my social anxiety beats me up quite frequently, so being able to battle it and chat with the hairdresser makes me feel like I've accomplished something. Yeah. That's true, actually. And Adrian says, legit about to get my hair cut at the barber. Love to just zone out and let them work their magic. I guess it depends as well what time of the day it is. Like, if it's right at the end of the day and I've just been at work, especially when I was doing breakfast, love to just sit back, close my eyes, let that head massage happen.
Hack on Triple J.
And that's all we've got time for on The Shake-Up. A huge thanks again to our expert Nova Castrian panel, Newcastle Herald journo Sage Swinton and Newcastle local legend Angus Neil, we'll call him that, executive producer Claire Bloomer. Thank you so much for another big week of Hack. Our senior producer Serge Negus, reporters Ange McCormack, Claudia Long, Edwina Story, Ellie Grounds, Joe Lauder, Maddie King and AJ Williams. And a very special thanks to our ABC Upper Hunter colleagues Bridget Murphy and Amelia Bernasconi. They helped me out so much in the Hunter this week. Next week is the last week of the election campaign, so get ready. It's going to be wild. I'll catch you then. See ya.